श्रेष्ठाय विठले श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी की नाम है। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी उच्चारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी देश स्वामी। So last night, to those who were here last night, in discussion of this very serious and actually very elaborate topic, we presented a scenario that was unpleasant. Certainly you could say it was a disaster. And one that perhaps it's a little more extreme than anything that has happened to us, but we can still identify with somewhat. That once upon a time somebody lost their temper, became angry, insulted someone, and the family sought revenge. And they created a plan to kill him at the end of a week. And although in one sense he could have averted his death, he more or less, because of his attitude and his feeling of remorse, he accepted, I have one more week to live. Recently in Perth, a friend of mine, a devotee the same age as myself, her son was at some kind of a meeting and his hand started tingling, and they quickly called an ambulance. They took him to the hospital. They found out that he had a cancer and it was in stage 4, and he was in his early 40s. So the whole family was thrown into extreme distress. So this concept of having only a week to live, it's not actually so far away from what can happen to any one of us, or our children, or somebody that we know. So therefore we can identify to some degree with a difficult situation. And naturally the next question that comes to mind is, what happened next? What did he do? How did he handle this? How did he take it? In this particular case, he took it as the mercy of the Lord. He took it that this was somehow or another a blessing. And he got himself ready to die in the most noble way possible. He prepared himself. And how did Krishna respond? Krishna sent him all the support he needed. He sent him his guru, who he had not met before this time because he was a busy man. And he made all arrangements to connect him through the process of hearing and chanting and asking very relevant questions. And he will do the same for every one of us. So now I would like to go to the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The sixth canto, as we know, is right in the middle between the first and the 12th. And I would like to share a little bit of how this great person, how his journey of hearing and chanting and receiving the support of Krishna, how it is progressing. So this particular personality, as those of us who have studied the Bhagavatam know, was a king. Maharaj Parikshit was his name. And just at that very most difficult point, he immediately released himself from every obligation. He was able to do this. He had led a life that was suitable for being able to do this. So he left his family circumstances carefully, not irresponsibly, in the hands of his son, and he took off all his royal clothes, and he put a simple loincloth, a gumcha, around his waist, and he went to the bank of the Ganga, or we understand, because this took place in Hastinapur, that it was the Jamuna Ganga, and he sat down there, and he prepared himself to focus his mind and meditate until that day arrived. He stopped eating, he stopped drinking, he stopped everything. He was so self-controlled. And because he was such a powerful and such a great saintly person, many, many sages came to witness this final ascension, because they were all sure that he would ascend to the spiritual world. And they came from all over. And the king very humbly sat down and asked them one question. Actually, he ended up asking many. But he began by asking, what is the responsibility of somebody who is about to die? And all these sages, you can imagine, just if I was to sit here in front of all of you and ask you, what should I do? I'm going to die. It would be a very grave experience. You'd all be thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to say? Now, of course, these were sages and we're all young devotees. So these sages all represented some kind of Vedic philosophy or another. And so they all presented their own views, their own philosophical theories, concepts, and principles that they were following. And as they presented everything to the king, there was contradictions or conflicts between them. They were not of the same mind. And then one young boy, extraordinarily young, simple, he was not even dressed. He was covered in dust. He was wandering around like he was a young, mad child, and girls and ladies were following him, laughing, teasing him, throwing things at him, playing with him, because he seemed to be deaf and dumb. And then he walked into the assembly, and everyone stood up. And they all folded their hands, and they welcomed him. And they recognized him by his physiognomy. Got the word wrong, but you know what I mean. They recognized him, and they understood that he was actually the son of Vyasadeva, Sukadeva, and he was the most learned and realized person there, even more than his father, who had taught him the Vedas. So he sat down, and the king very respectfully, after offering many words of respect and honor and praise, he asked his question again. What should one do if one is about to die? And a dialogue took place, and that dialogue continued for almost the whole 7 days. Backwards and forwards, the king asked many questions. And when we get to the 5th canto, of the Bhagavatam, one they're called cantos, many chapters within a canto. When we get there, we hear that Maharaja Parikshit is hearing about the hellish planets, the places where people go if they act sinfully. And he feels quite disturbed to hear this, because you can understand, he's a king. And he knows, even within his citizens, some people will disobey the law. And when you hear that they're going to suffer in any way, if you have a kind or compassionate heart, you feel very anxious. How is it possible to avoid them from suffering? How can this suffering be averted? So even though he's about to suffer, he's not even aware of his suffering, because he's hearing and hearing and hearing. But he's thinking of others, because his mind is so transcendentally clear. And he's wondering, how can they be protected from future suffering? So then his teacher, Sukadeva, he says to him, they can be protected from suffering if they perform suitable acts of atonement according to the degree of the crime. If they, for example, do something very serious, seriously wrong, they have to perform a very severe type of atonement. And by performing that atonement, some kind of an act of like an apology, but more serious, then they're freed from that, the reaction. And the king wasn't satisfied, even though this is his teacher, he was not satisfied with his answer. Because they were both very extraordinarily spiritually thoughtful personalities. So without any disrespect, the king said, I'm not satisfied with that answer. And the reason is because even after you atone, right? Now, atonement means I do something bad and I counteract it by doing something good. And this is actually how we all think. If you think about it, we normally don't think about how we think. We just think. But actually, this is how we think. Oh, I did that. That wasn't very good. Oh, I'll do this. And you do something good. You do something kind. You do something different. And then initially you feel quite better about yourself. Oh, you know, that was what I mean what I did to that person, but that was quite nice what I did to that person. So I'm actually, I balance out as quite a reasonably kind person. Until the problem is that the same desire or the same trait that caused you to commit some unkind act, it surfaces again, the same fault appears. And when that same fault reappears, then you feel very depressed. So Maharaj Pirkit was thinking about this, and he said, this is insufficient, a form of relief. Because the roots are still there. The essence is still there. It's like you have a bamboo tree, you chop it off at the ground, but the roots are still in the ground. So when the rain comes again, the opportunity arises, up it comes again. So how to remove the roots as well as chopping off the bamboo? So Sukadev Goswami accepted the king's point. He respected this point. And then he decided to tell him a story, a Puranic Lila. Purana means history. So this was a historic account that had been told many, many times by sages to their sincere students. And this particular story that we will hear, well, not story in the sense of a made-up story, but Sukadev is telling this to Maharaj Pirikit because he wants to prove the strength of devotional service. Now I think everybody here is already has some inclination towards devotional service or to becoming more and more attached to the Supreme Lord. And most of us are regular practitioners, so we know everything already. But unfortunately, we tend to forget it very quickly. Once a devotee, a very respectable devotee, was talking to somebody and they said, every morning I wake up an atheist. And when I heard that, I looked a little down on them. I thought, that's terrible. Obviously they're not such a good devotee as I thought. And then all of a sudden I started observing myself when I first wake up in the morning. And I discovered, every morning I wake up an atheist. And that is why we have sadhana. That as quickly as possible, we redirect the mind from its wandering around, thinking, what's here for me, what's this, what's that, where's my family, how am I going to do this, this, my, good and bad, and on, what I'm going to achieve today. Everything, me, and my. And I again have to focus on actually trying to remember that everything belongs to Krishna. So this particular pastime, we will go into it with some depth, but I would like to first focus on this verse. And if we have time, because I'm on a very strict schedule, I would like to, and if the technology provides, I would like to play you a very nice segment of Srila Prabhupada speaking on this verse that inspired me once very, very deeply. And to this day, I always remember that moment. It was one of those moments that we're hoping that you will have one of, where you don't forget that. It somehow or other never goes out of your memory. Of course you forget it on a day-to-day basis, but when you come into a situation that demands some attention of a particular kind, your mind will take this out of one of the folders that it has up there, and it will put it right onto the front page and say, think about this. So those moments are very important. And usually they come with a little bit of effort. Usually they come as a result of some difficulty, actually. But let us hear. So together now we can recite the verse. Patita skarito badna sandasastaptahata harityavaseshtaha gumamnahatiyatanaha patita skarito badna sandasastaptahata Would anyone else like to recite the verse with a better Sanskrit accent? One person, please. Somebody brave.
Fallen down.
Skalitaha.
Slipped.
Bagna.
Having broken his bones.
Sandasta.
Bitten.
Tapta. Severely attacked by fever or similar painful conditions.
Ahata.
Injured.
Harir.
Lord Krishna.
Iti.
Thus.
Avasena.
Accidentally.
Aha.
Chance.
Pumam.
A person.
Not.
Arhati.
Deserves.
Yatana.
Hellish conditions.
Translation. If one chants the holy name of Hari and then dies because of an accidental misfortune, such as falling from the top of a house, slipping and suffering broken bones while traveling on the road, being bitten by a serpent, being afflicted with pain and high fever, or being injured by a weapon, one is immediately absolved from having to enter hellish life, even though he is sinful. Please repeat. If one chants the holy name of Hari,
and then dies,
because of an accidental misfortune, such as falling from the top of a house, slipping and suffering broken bones, while traveling on the road, being bitten by a serpent,
being afflicted by pain and high fever,
or being injured by a weapon,
one is immediately absolved
from having to enter hellish life.
Even though he is sinful.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8:6, Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam jajanti ante kalevaram tam tam eva tikunteya saratan bhava bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he would attain without fail. If one practices chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, he is naturally expected to chant Hare Krishna when he meets with some accident. Even without such practice, however, if one somehow or another chants the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, when he meets with an accident and dies, he will be saved from hellish life after death. Now, when I read this verse, it was different than hearing Srila Prabhupada speak on this verse. Because in the verse here we see in the translation of the Sanskrit verse, this is related to Ajamil, whom the story is the leader is about. And so therefore he was about to enter into hellish life, and he was the servants of Yamaraj were told, no, he is not to enter into hellish life. But we think that we are devotees, so we are not acting in horrible ways, and so we are not about to enter into hellish life. And that is actually correct. But what we are about to enter into, if we don't chant Hare Krishna at the time of death, is rebirth. We're destined to enter into another life and another cycle of birth and death. So Srila Prabhupada, when speaking on this verse, he does not refer to it in relation so much to sinful, hellish life, but to rebirth. So let us go to the history in which this particular verse has been spoken. So, Ajamil, this is a story that Sukadev is telling to Maharaj Purohit to describe the potency of devotional life. And he describes that in a place now known as Kannauj, in northern India, there was a Brahmin and he had a son, and his name was Ajamil. He was the only son of this family, and he was very, very clean, pure, wholesome, devoted to his parents, dutiful, obedient. He had all kinds of really wonderful qualities. He was religious, and he every day would assist his father in his worship of Lord Vishnu. And one day his father asked him to go to the forest and to collect some leaves and flowers for the worship. And Ajamil went to collect the leaves and the flowers. And on the way there, he saw something that he had never seen before. And something that was extremely uncharacteristic at that time, and something that is extremely common today. He saw a very, very low-class man in a particular place where he was passing through the village. He saw this low-class man, and beside him and resting on his arm was a prostitute. And she was drunk. And she was so drunk that her clothes were slipping from her body. And she was laughing in a rowdy way, and her eyes were rolling. She was a little bit dizzy.
Nowadays you see someone who's been up all night, and they're just coming home in the morning. So they were like that. And this low-class gentleman, he had, perhaps it's not a gentleman, he had turmeric rubbed on his arms, because this is known to excite the desires within. And so he was laughing and joking and sporting with her and kissing and singing all kinds of songs. And Ajamil saw this. And he saw this with his eyes. But when he saw this, this impression, just as we were talking about having an impression that life is lasting, this impression went through his eyes and went right to his heart. And somehow or another, he was magnetized. He was magnetized to the prostitute. He saw this woman and he thought, I want to do that. I want to do that. And then, because he was a pious young man, he tried to draw back his senses. He tried to, wait a minute, I can't be thinking like this. He's already married. I can't think these ways. And he tried and tried and tried to get back into his spiritual sense. But the impression of what he saw had gone deep into his consciousness. And then he left that place. He came back. He brought back the flowers to his father. He gave the flowers. He sat there. His father was asking him, now you do this, you do this. And he was a bit absent-minded. He kind of wasn't there. And then he was thinking and thinking and thinking on what he had seen. And at the next convenient time, he went back to the same place as soon as he could. And he went around and he asked different people if they knew where that woman lived. And finally, after some time, he found her. He became, you could say, obsessed by this desire. And he went to visit her. And he told her, I want to take you home with me. And she laughed at him. She said, you can pay me first. And he said, no, I want to take you home with me. So she agreed to come to his house. And when she got there, she saw that he had a wife. And she said, you brought me here? You've got a wife. And he said, yes, but I want you to be my wife. And she laughed at him. And she said, then get rid of her. And he did. He sent his wife back to his father, her father's place. He said, I'm not satisfied with her. She's not behaving properly. You should take her back. And he brought that prostitute first as a maidservant into his house and then as his wife. What a disaster. Can you imagine what his parents were thinking? And he was completely infatuated with her. He lived with her. He ate the food she cooked. He tolerated her profession. She was a prostitute. She wasn't a chaste woman. And as he was trying to please her and keep her there because she wanted money, he started using his father's money, taking whatever money he could get from his father to satisfy her. And some authorities say that his mother and father were so heartbroken. They were so heartbroken, they moved out of their house and they went to live on the edge of the village. They had to see this. They went to live on the edge of the village in a small hut. And he used all the money he could get. And gradually he had to start stealing money. And he had to work out all kinds of ways to keep this prostitute attracted to him. Because a prostitute is a prostitute. Her mind is fickle. She's not interested in anything kind of chaste and regular. She's interested only in enjoyment. So Ajameel started cheating, lying, gambling, anything he could do to get money. And in the Bhagavatam it says that he was supporting the prostitute and her children, which indicates that not only were some of those children his children, but the other children were her children by so many men. He had become so degraded. So degraded. So far away from what he was when he was a young man. And another interesting piece of information was that at some point in his journey through life, some kind of a sadhu came to his house, just as sadhus go door to door. And he offered some kind of service to this sadhu. Not very much, considering how degraded he was. And the sadhu, in reciprocation for his gesture, he told him, if you have another son, by this time he's an old man, he said, if you have another son, name him Narayan. And so in his 80s, he had a son by the prostitute. It was such a sad story. Everything gone, all of his good qualities destroyed, and so many bad qualities growing and growing and growing in his life. And he didn't even know or care. He'd long forgotten what it was to be ethical or to be righteous. All those things had gone. And he was living there with the prostitute and he had his son. And when the son was born and the son was on the mother's lap, he called for the son, took the son on his lap, and he said, my son, your name is Narayan. And then from that moment on, because he loved this child, he was almost like a grandchild, he would call the boy, Narayan, Narayan, come here, Narayan, put that there, Narayan, bring me my this, Narayan, go over there, Narayan, do this, Narayan, do that. He called his son and called his son. Countless times he was calling his son. And as his life progressed, it came time for his departure from this world. And as he was lying on his bed, he was feeling quite unwell. He saw before him, coming towards him as he was struggling to breathe because it was about time for him to leave, he saw these fierce characters coming towards him. They were horrifying. And they had ropes, just like, you know, in some of the old-fashioned American movies, if somebody was a criminal, they would put a rope around their neck and they'd hang them. So they had like hanging nooses. And they were coming to take the soul out of the body. Death means the soul is going to be taken out of the body, and the body falls down as it always has been, lifeless. Because the animating soul has now been removed. And he was terrified. And what did he do in his terror? He called his son. Because his son was so near to him and gave him so much happiness. So he called Narayan, Narayan. And exactly as he called Narayan one time, these extraordinary personalities appeared. He was in a coma. And he could see these extraordinary personalities who appeared on the other side of the bed. He's there. These fierce characters are on this side who are threatening to drag him away, certainly for a hellish punishment. And on the other side, these exalted transcendental beings appear, and they have all the emblems of Lord Narayan, and they immediately, in a voice that sounded like thunder, they tell the personalities on the other side of the bed, stop! You cannot take this man. Very dramatic. And the these are the servants of Yamaraj, these are the servants of Narayan. So the servants of Yamaraj immediately say, we must take him. He is sinful. We must take him because he needs to be punished. And the servants of Lord Narayan say, then first of all, please answer our questions. And they ask them three questions. What are religious principles? What are the symptoms of irreligion? And what is the process of punishment? What is religion? What is irreligion? And how should one be punished? And the servants of Lord Yamaraj, who is of course the Lord of Death, who awards punishment, they began their lengthy reply. So they began by explaining that the Vedas have come from the mouth of Lord Brahma, and they come from ultimately Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan has made the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And there are so many witnesses. In the air is witnessing what you do, the sun is witnessing what you do, the Lord finally in your heart is witnessing what you do. And if someone deviates from the Vedic principles, then we come and we punish him. And then because everyone somehow or other a little bit must deviate, so everyone is actually punishable. And religion and irreligion, because what is religion? What is irreligion? Religion is to follow and irreligion is not to follow. And proportionately to the degree that they're irreligious, we punish them for their benefit. And Yamaraj, he's the lord of all the punishment. He is so subtle, his power is so great, that he's just like the Lord in the heart. He witnesses everything. He sees everything. He knows exactly the proper way to get this person to atone. We heard about atonement. Instead of one way to atone is to do good, the other way is to accept punishment. If you do something bad, you take the punishment and you equalize. So he gives the punishment. And so they spoke like this and they said, so therefore, according to somebody's desires, they act. And according to their actions, they have to take another birth. And according to those actions and their desires, they take more actions and more desires. It's like an endless, like a cocoon. They're trapped in it, this cycle of acting and desires and desires and acting and birth. And this is a very awkward position. And so, they have to be taught how to act properly so they can be saved. This is what the servants of Yamaraj said. It's very logical. They didn't say anything wrong. They didn't make anything up. But it sounds quite somber, doesn't it? You were to sit there feeling like, uh-oh, what's going to happen to me? So then, as they were waiting there, they had given their answer. The servants of Narayan looked at them and they shook their heads and they said, it is so painful to see irreligion in the disguise of religion. They were saying, everything you said was irreligious. Everything we said is irreligious. Nobody's ever checked us before. How can this be? And then the servants of Lord Narayan said, you are punishing a sinless person. They said, a sinless person? And they actually accounted all of the things that he had done. And then the servants of Lord Narayan said, Yamaraj, who is your master, is making a big mistake. And they said, wait a minute. How can you say that? He was so bad and Yamaraj is so great. Why are you saying this? And then they said, if people in general who are simple, if they see that their leaders disobey the rules and principles of religion, how can they be peaceful and happy? And today we see so many leaders, they disobey the rules and principles of religion. How can we be happy? How can we trust them? How can we believe they have our best interests in mind? How can we believe it? We cannot believe it. So this was the arguments of Lord Narayan's servants. And they said, this man, and they pointed to Ajamil, who's lying there terrified, he has already atoned for every sinful activity he ever performed. It's all atoned for. And not only that, everything into the future that he will ever do, it is all gone. It is all gone. And they said, simply one time, and Srila Prabhupada expressed this also, one time chanting the name Narayan is enough to release him from every sin he's ever committed. They said these four syllables, Narayana, attract the Lord's attention. When he hears his name, they attract the Lord's attention. And he says, this man has chanted my name and he deserves protection. And the Yamadutas, they got really upset and they said, he didn't chant the Lord's name. He chanted his son's name. He wasn't thinking of Lord Narayan. He wasn't calling to the Lord. He was just calling for his son. He's so sinful. How can you say these things? And the servants of Narayan said, he gave this name to his son, but it is not his son's name, it is the Lord's name. He gave the Lord's name to his son. So when he called his son, he chanted the Lord's name. And because he chanted the Lord's name, which has such power, the first time when he took the baby on his lap, the very first time he chanted Narayan, he became sinless. And this is the most amazing, actually, pastime. For I must admit, for years and years I couldn't understand it. How did he become sinless? He kept sinning. How did he become sinless? And then I realized, well, even the servants of Yamaraj couldn't understand it. They had to go back and have this explained to them. How could this horrible person doing so many abominable things be considered free of any sin? And Ajamil is lying there in the bed looking like this, and this conversation is going on. Who's going to win? And he's listening to the conversation. He's hearing this. And as he's hearing this discussion about the glories of the Lord's holy name, Ajamil becomes awakened to his actual position. So then they say, they continue on and they describe the power of the Lord's name and say, whatever sins are performed, the Lord, when he hears his name chanted, he will give that person protection. And then my verse, this verse here comes, and now you can understand why they're saying that whatever happens, if one chants the name of the Lord and dies in some unfortunate way, he will never enter into any kind of hellish life, even if he's sinful. So the servants of Yamaraj recognized the servants of Narayan were not going to let this, they were not going to let them take him. They were not going to let this go. And they left, although they were very disturbed. And then, just as Ajamil was about to talk to these extraordinarily beautiful persons who had come and saved him, and express something to them, say something to them, he turned to them and they disappeared. And he thought, is this a dream? What was that? What happened? What happened? And now he was awakened to what his life was actually like. By this conversation, he began to understand something, and he looked at himself and he thought, what have I done? I was such a pious family member. I did everything I could to cause pain to my parents. I married a prostitute. I ate all kinds of horrible things. I killed people. I did so many things. And in his mind, perhaps he was thinking, perhaps they'll come back, because he knew the things that he had done. But he was so grateful for the release that he had achieved that he aspired to immediately leave that place and purify himself further. So his sins had been nullified, neutralized, removed. But he had further that he had to do. He now had to develop his devotion, his bhakti. And similarly, many of us now, this room, I see many pious faces and people who have been devotees who have been born into devotee families. So in a sense, no impious activities were there. But when Srila Prabhupada was present, he was dealing mostly only with Westerners. And our lives were so impious, so unfortunate, so full of sinful activities. But we never knew they were sinful. And Ajamil also, this is one of the key points in why he was sinless. He didn't know he was addicted to sinful activities. He didn't even know they were sinful. So he wasn't misusing the Lord's name. And when you become a devotee, ironically, you have some knowledge. It's a little bit easier, if you're still a little bit sinful, to misuse the Lord's name. You think, oh, I'll do this and this and this, and it's no problem, because then after I'll chant my rounds, and that will be all, that will be balanced out. And this is considered one of the offenses that we have to avoid. So Ajamil, because he was totally ignorant, he made no offenses. He didn't know that the Lord's name, he wasn't even calling the Lord's name. So this leela is not to glorify a sinful person. It is to glorify the power that is there inherently in the Lord's name. And how even an offenseless, sinful person, when chanting the Lord's name, will receive the results very quickly. And Srila Prabhupada says, if Ajamil, who is chanting neglectfully and carelessly, receives the result of the Lord's mercy, what to speak of those who are seriously trying to chant Krishna's name from their hearts? They should be assured that the messengers of Lord Narayan, who travel everywhere, always, are always looking after their protection. So, I chose this particular verse. I'm going to... Is that ready? Even slightly charged? I want to let you hear something from Srila Prabhupada on this verse. And then I'll tell you why this verse is particularly dear to me. So you can hear it. Okay, Srila Prabhupada is reciting the verse. Can you make it up? Okay. I'll pause this, right?
Okay, please.
Nila gave some of the practical example. There are persons who criticize chanting of Hare Krishna mantra.
So there are persons who criticize the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra because they say that this is too much. How can I believe this? This is too much.
I've described that one can become free from the sinful reaction of lying simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. So sometimes those who are not in the line, they think it is too much. It is too much. So the next verse, it is advised, not it is too much, you can taste it.
You can taste it.
Taste it.
Yes.
What is that taste? What is it? When you fall down, from a high place, suppose from the womb, you may fall down.
When you fall down.
What is that? Skolita, you may sleep and fall down. Mabuna, by falling down, you may break your bones.
These are all possible.
Sandasta, you may be bitten by some animals. Cats, dogs, snakes, there are so many domestic. Then stop talking, you may be burned, and half of you may be injured from others. Then, during this time, you can taste.
So here's the first point. So the Prabhupada is saying, this is practical. If any of these difficulties occur in your life, difficulties or disasters, it is practical. You can test it. So this is how a devotee must be. I want to test this because at the time of death, I want to be as strongly prepared as possible. I don't know when that is. So therefore, I have so many tests are coming. Very practical.
What is that test? Hari iti avasena aha. Try to chant Hare Krishna. Kumar, if anyone does so, na arvati jatana, he immediately feels that from the injuries, they are not feeling pain.
So what an interesting reward comes as a result of testing, Prabhupada is saying. That if you try and test chanting Hare Krishna in all these difficult times, from the injuries, you won't feel pain. And now he gives this a final test.
In the snake bite, you may be saying, the author said, never say that you may be saved from death, but the suggestion is that you may not feel much pain.
So the last point Srila Prabhupada says is, the author doesn't say that you will become free from death, you can avoid death, but he says that if you chant Hare Krishna at the time of death, you may not feel much pain. So this is, I have to stop very quickly because I've gone 5 minutes over my prescribed time and you've got a very intense program here. But please try to take in as much as you can or whatever you can. In 1.5 days it has to be intense. otherwise you will get nothing because of such a short time. Please try to take advantage of the time here and try to get some points. It's also very helpful for those who are capable to take notes, because somehow or other it anchors you, because the mind tends to go here and there and so on and so forth. So I will stop at this point. Unfortunately, I cannot take time for questions, but if there are any questions, I can speak with anyone at a different time. Thank you for your patient listening, and I think it's time now. A location of Prabhu hasn't appeared. I think it's time for breakfast. Hare Krishna.